We're also joined by Rodan Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hi there, Scott.
Good morning.
Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee, as we know, there's a court fight being played out over the use of speed cameras in Providence. Did you support the move by Providence to use these speed cameras?
No, and actually, as a mayor, I rejected the similar concept when I had a proposal in front of me to do the same thing about buses and putting cameras on buses where you could kind of, be targeting revenue sources that, quite frankly, could be, you know, if you're interested in public safety, there's other ways to do this. 14,000 or 15,000 tickets in a short period of time, it speaks for itself.
If Providence proves successful in this court fight, do you expect that we would see this speed camera approach in many other cities and towns throughout Rhode Island?
Well, if it's done, you need to make sure that it's done in a way where you're not penalizing the drivers who are, you know, just basically not speeding way significantly. You can set the parameters different, but 14,000 tickets in 30 days is absolutely ridiculous.
So what would the right way to do it be?
I mean, if I was asked to do it, and I would probably set the speed limit a little bit higher, and I would probably have certain warning signs triggered in based on the speed. But again, I rejected the idea as a way to go, and I don't think I would change that.
Let's go to Scott.
The Pawtucket Red Sox Senate subsidy deal, yes or no?
Yes.
Why?
I think that it's very important to a community, and I'm supporting the municipality, so I'm following Don Grebian's lead. I think that he knows his community well, and that's an important thing for them for the development. I like the idea of 50,000 square feet, at least, of new business development in that area, and I think it's a nice tag for the state of Rhode Island that is a positive one that we should keep. If the House can do a better deal and still get the deal done, then fine. But if not, let's move ahead and get the thing built.
Your opponent has called for public takeover, essentially, of National Grid, the utility. I've lived in places with publicly owned utilities, and frankly, they're great. Is this pie in the sky by Regenberg? The amount of money it would take, I assume, to make this conversion would be astronomical.
Well, you can't take property from people, that's for sure, as a for-profit. And if you have to pay them, then you've got to see the numbers. And I think that a lot of the things that are being proposed, like single-pay health care and other things, you really got to put a pencil to the paper, Scott. This particular thing, remember, in Massachusetts, they have 30-some-odd of these type of things.
Yes.
And they haven't approved one or set one in place in 100 years. So there's got to be a reason why that's the case. We're better off to make sure that we keep the pressure on the National Grid, make sure that they are providing the highest level of service at the lowest possible cost. And we're working on things right now that can help ratepayers who are having trouble paying their bills. And I think we'll come out with something this week that is going to be very, very significant to put a dent in that area.
You seemed displeased when Providence Mayor Jorge Alorza recently endorsed your opponent, State Representative Aaron Regenberg. Do you expect any other Democrats who you've worked with in the past to support Regenberg over you in the race for lieutenant governor?
No, I think that'll be the only one.
Switching gears, there's a conservative group, the Gaspy Project, which has adopted Representative Regenberg as its public enemy number one, targeting him with some very sharp rhetoric. Do you support or oppose the Gaspy Project's criticism of Representative Regenberg?
Well, they can take whatever tack they want. That's not the tack that I'll be taking. I'll be comparing, you know, what I stand for against whoever runs for me, and we'll compare that. I'm not running against an agenda that's coming from the far right, and think that that's I'm not going to carry the water for that place. I'm going to campaign based on what makes the most sense for the people who live in the state of Rhode Island. That's how I'm going to do it.
A lot of the women in the Democratic Party and the Women's Caucus are pushing to get the Roe v. Wade federal Supreme Court abortion standard, which of course means pro-choice, enshrined in Rhode Island law. Do you favor that?
Well, first of all, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, so I don't even know whether that, you know, like, you know, is it more of a gesture as opposed to support, or is it actually going to actually hold up? I don't know. I don't see the Roe versus Wade going to be reversed, and I do support choice as it currently stands, I don't know whether it adds anything, any more protection or not, quite frankly, Scott.
We're talking here with Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee. And Lieutenant Governor, we saw how the end of the fourth quarter of 2017, your opponent Aaron Regenberg had about twice as much in his campaign account than you did. Money isn't everything in politics, but it does count for something. So how do you plan to overcome Aaron Regenberg's advantage in fundraising?
You don't have to. You just have to raise enough to run a good campaign. I did that 4 years ago when people thought that, certain insiders didn't think I could win that campaign. But the general public understood that I can. We'll get our message out. I'm not worried about that.
How would you describe your relationship with Governor Raimondo? I talked to people close to her who say you don't really have a close relationship.
I had a good meeting with her on Monday morning, and talked about several things that are going on. And so we certainly have a good relationship with her staff. And I know that the governor's the governor. She has a schedule that doesn't ever all interact. But I can tell you, that's why, Scott, quite frankly, that I have come out publicly to say that the lieutenant governor and the governor should run as a team, and we should do that as quickly as we can to make sure that you campaign together, you manage together, and you support the governor or lieutenant governor should be completely in sync with the governor's agenda to make sure that moves forward.
Speaking of elections, the last two governors have both been elected with less than 41% of the vote. And then we wonder why the governor can't build a consensus. What can we do about that, or should we worry about it?
I think you should worry about it, because especially this year, if there's multiple more and more candidates to go that route, right, to bypass primaries and get right into the general, you may elect somebody with 28%. I think this is the time to address it because it's surfacing, and I think you're going to need some sort of a runoff strategy or something in there that kind of qualifies someone that actually has a majority vote or up close to a certain number to take the position.
You helped establish the Rhode Island Merrill Academies. What do you say to parents in places like Providence, who see mayoral academies and charter schools as draining resources from traditional public schools?
Well, first of all, I can just tell you my experience in the town of Cumberland having a Blackstone Valley Prep Merrill Academy. It didn't drain we ran surpluses in our district school every year that the school has been open. Our schools, actually, our public schools, district schools have got stronger. We had a Blue Ribbon school this year, a national Blue Ribbon school in our district, which we're very proud of. And the other critique is that it was going to spike taxes because it was raising. No, Cumberland had one of the lowest tax increases during the time I was there. We probably averaged 1% or less a year. I think most communities would like that. And I would also say the other thing that with Providence, as you're on that topic, the Achievement First Merrill Academy is outperforming the district schools right now to a large degree in Providence and outside Providence at a very high low-income level. And what we should be doing is using those examples of how to actually move our public schools forward.
As Lieutenant Governor, you've been pursuing a tour of Rhode Island's 39 cities and towns. What have you learned from that tour that you didn't know before?
Well, I think that one of them is that we are making progress on the business quotients. I think that, when we came to office, we had a number of very bad ratings in terms of our business friendliness. We just had one metric that took us from 35th place to 9th place. I think that's really positive. So I think you're seeing a level of optimism about it. I just came from a Goldman Sachs 10,000 job seminar where we have had over 103 businesses take a course like was originated in Babson College. So what I'm learning right now is, one, there's a number of activities going on. We have over 1,500 manufacturers. I'm just ending the manufacturing tour right now. We have over 1,500 manufacturers in the state of Rhode Island. It's at over 1,500 jobs in the last 3 years. So my feeling is that it's showing that there's a great deal of optimism and opportunity, and the work still has to continue, but I'm seeing that, and I'm happy, I'm pleased about that. And I think it has a lot to do with what's happened over the last few years in the state of Rhode Island.
We're out of time, so we need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And the Lieutenant Governor of Rhode Island, Dan McKee.
Thank you so much for the invitation.